Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
The journey is a sequence of events that got us to where we are today. It's the good, the bad, the ugly. It's what we look back on to see how far we've come and decide where we want to go. Our journey is a testimony to everyone that what we've accomplished, they can also. Welcome to Journey Radio. We are here this morning with Paul Bruniforte. He is the coach of the Olympic Method. We also have a special treat because we have Samantha Gignes, and she is a chess coach, followed up by Christiana Russell, who is a part of Mended Wings. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Okay, we're going to do a round robin right now, starting with Paul. Tell us a little bit about your company and exactly what you provide.
Yes, my company, the name of my company is The Olympic Method, and I was inspired to develop that name because of my admiration for Olympians. And I teach people how to live like an Olympian. And most people think, well, Olympians, they're special people. They have these special talents. But really, they're ordinary people who have committed to do extraordinary things. And so I help people be the best version of themselves. And that is a very rewarding experience when the light goes on and they start having possibility thinking, mm-hmm. as opposed to thinking that they are less than what they're capable of being.
Oh, so great. And that's what Journey is about, is letting everybody know around the world what they can do. Well, Samantha, tell us a little bit about what you do. I think it's kind of unique and exciting.
Okay, I'm one of 75 coaches in all, and there's only 8 females in the whole company. So I teach children all the way from age 3 to normally 6th grade. I can teach high school if that's anybody wants it. I do that private and that kind of thing if they wish for that. I have presently 99 boys. And yay, 33 ladies that are part of my teams. And how I get that is through 10 different schools. The 10 different schools that I have absolutely and totally inspire me, because I can be in Cave Creek, all the way in Cave Creek, and the same day I'll be in Chandler.
Great. Christiana, tell us a little bit about Mended Wings.
Sure, absolutely. So Mended Wings is a consulting company, and we operate in 3 specific areas. First is professional consulting, and what we do with that is anyone who is interested in transitioning outside of their career, maybe into another career, or maybe they're interested in working in another department. We oftentimes have clients who are looking to work their way up, so they will solicit our service in order to get that in their strategy together for that. We do personal consulting, and that's with anyone who is maybe recognizing that their soft skills need some attention. And so what we do with that is we sit down with them and kind of work through a plan to help them best understand what areas they need to improve on. Maybe there's some areas of weakness that they can help themselves improve on with our guidance. And then there is also training and facilitation that is offered. And those two are kind of combined in that we often will be solicited by organizations, whether it's for-profit or nonprofit, to come in and facilitate a specific training around personal development, or maybe facilitating a conversation that is addressing team building exercises. So our whole approach in working with clients is that we recognize that they're coming from a strength base, and what we want to do is to help enhance that, to help them unlock their authentic truth, and then experience the peace and self-fulfillment that they are seeking.
Oh, that's exciting. So we have two coaches today, but totally different focuses.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's kind of exciting to see the diverse group. But the one thing we have in common is that you all said, you know what, I can do this on my own. I can become an entrepreneur. And so then anybody can answer this. When did you know the moment was right to step away from corporate America and do this thing?
Well, I'll start there. I was a CPA with a Big Eight accounting firm, and then I became controller for a large corporation. I did that for 10 years, and then for 13 years, I was the president of a national design and fabrication company. So I had about 35 years in the corporate world. And one of the challenges in the corporate world is if you form a partnership, it's like a marriage.
That's true.
And my marriage ended, so to speak. So that's how I knew it was over, is when my partner and I just could not agree on the direction of the company. And I thought, well, I'll take a sabbatical. Mm-hmm. Just for 6-8 months, I had three teenage sons. And after 6 months, I needed that to clear my brain from feeling that I needed to be valued in the corporate world, because I have all these employees, I have two assistants, they get me my coffee, they do everything for me. And for a little while, I really missed that until I didn't. Until I started to see how wonderful it was to be with my sons, and also how I could make money not being in this world. And so for me, that argument that I wound up having with my partner turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to me.
Wow. And so what you're saying is it's a world that you feel like you were in, and then you needed to sort of get out of it.
Yeah, when you're in it, you can't see anything else. It just seems that I've got three teenage kids who have to go to college. I've got to hang in there.
Okay,
I've got to stay with it.
I would love to answer that, because I'm speaking to an audience that's more moms and dads. And the moms and dads have these little tiny kids, and they have no idea how brilliant their little three-year-old is, because they see this little rugrat running around, and the little rugrat, oh, he couldn't possibly sit down and play chess. He couldn't possibly do that. But I have to tell you, my leaders, my success stories, the ones that actually end up getting all the trophies, first place, and moving on and growing and growing into a champion and leader of their teams, it's the kids that can't sit still. And you wouldn't absolutely believe it, but that is exactly what happens. ADD, ADHD, come to chess, come to the chess world, because this will open up everything that you ever wanted. It's like a key that unlocks this unimaginable potential in your child. And I can't imagine one person who wouldn't think of entering their child into this world.
Well, as we were talking before we went on air, I had all my children in chess, along with piano, karate, and a lot of other things. But chess was something that my father and I played. He always beat me. I never was able to beat him. But it was my father really felt that chess was very important for everybody to learn. Mm-hmm. Years later, I understood it. I didn't understand it at the time.
No. Yeah. I think I tried it when I first got married.
Uh-huh.
And it just wasn't my game. But I think that it's something that is like golf or either crochet or different things like that, where you have to focus.
I can't believe
on
you
it.
Say golf, because that's on my list. I actually wrote this. Golf, there is one fight with yourself and yourself only, which is the closest to chess. And I was a golfer myself, and yes, I did well. And again, I was the only girl, and there was 40 guys playing golf.
Okay, you mentioned golf, so now you've hit an area that I'm really passionate about. I've actually given lots of speeches on golf, and I use the acronym BEST. Because I think it's the best sport. The B stands for beautiful. Because wherever you go, even if you go to Maui.
Oh, that's so true.
The most beautiful place, any place you go, is the golf course. Go to Maui, then go to Kapalua. The E stands for exercise. Even if you're in a cart, you're still getting exercise. You're walking around. The S stands for, it's really a simple sport.
Yeah.
Because 30 strokes is on the putting green. Anybody can putt. And the ball just sits there. It's not being thrown at you at 95 miles an hour. So all you have to do is just have a repeatable swing. Mm-hmm. And then the T, which is the most important. It's a sport that you can play forever. It's timeless. I go out and I'll play with a 90-year-old mm-hmm. who shoots yeah. a score lower than his age. So it's inspiring wow. to me to think that I've got many, many more years of golf. So I had to go off on a tangent because if any of the listeners, golf, get into golf. That
yeah.
is one of, when I coach people, mm-hmm. I talk to them about what is it you would like to do? Because
right.
that's my idea for people is I want them, and I challenge them, write down things you want to do. And a lot of times they'll say, I want to learn how to play golf, but it's too difficult. Mm-hmm. So that's
interesting you say with golf, because we're talking about coaching, mm-hmm. and we both know how to coach. Mm-hmm. And then I get a student that wants me to teach them, and he's the class clown. And he's always missing one step mm-hmm. in the lesson. And he's losing to all his rounds and all his tournaments. Three times, he's not winning at all. His mother wouldn't let him give up, which yay for the mom. Mm-hmm. What happens in that situation is once that kid decided, I'm not going to be a class clown anymore, I'm going to be a class champion. And he did it. Mm-hmm. As soon as he got that idea of, mm-hmm. okay, now I can be a champion, then that's what he did. Golf mm-hmm. has the same principles as chess, yeah. that it's timeless, but his brother was learning football, and his mother hired an NFL coach.
Wow.
And guess what he did? He made every single one of his mm-hmm. players learn how to play chess so that they could do chess moves on the field.
Right. Well, Christina, you know what? Tell me when someone needs a coach. How do they know? Oh, I need a coach. Because I actually got a coach for golf. He was pretty good. Right. So when do people know?
I think when you hit a roadblock. I think that you don't know what you don't know until you hit a roadblock, when you don't know where to go next. And I think oftentimes when I'm speaking to clients, they feel like they're sinking and can't find an anchor. So they're looking for something to hold on to. Mm-hmm. And the direction that they're going in, they're not sure if it's the right direction. So they're wanting someone to come in and tell them what to do. And I often will tell them, I'm not here to tell you what to do. You know what you need to do, but I recognize the importance of having someone guide you, right? So I think it's when you're feeling, okay, I've done everything I know to do, what's next? But not everybody is ready for a coach. I think that sometimes you'll experience working with clients who they want the answers, but they don't want to necessarily do the work that requires it. Or maybe they don't understand the work that is required is as in-depth as it is. And so I think that when you are at a space, when you're at a place of uncertainty, I think that's when you need to start asking the questions of, who do I need to help guide me?
And so this is to all of you guys. Is it a conversation?
Yeah.
At least having the conversation to
right.
find out.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
when you think about a guide, you know, you start with the smallest children that mm-hmm. can actually walk and talk. But what's interesting is touching the chess pieces mm-hmm. and moving the chess pieces does not require you to talk. So you can actually communicate the most important rules and lessons mm-hmm. about the game right when you meet that child for the first time. And have you ever met a child and their eyes connect and then all of a sudden you get this great warm feeling inside of you?
Yeah, that was my 3-year-old. So I stayed at home.
See?
7 years.
Three.
But then I moved to Arizona and it's like, what? I have to wait until when to go to school because I had November, December. So I decided to teach my daughter how to read at about 4 and a half, and her brother at 3, he picked it up. But what I saw was the light in their eyes. Like, he would sit there, and I think, and I was babysitting, he was 2 and a half. So the eyes light up. It's the connection you have with the person. Right, Paul?
A word for that called spark.
Yeah. Spunk. Give me one. Spark.
Well, Christina mentioned something that I think is really important, and that is sometimes people aren't ready for a coach. And for me, I actually say no more than I say yes to coaching people because too many people want therapists, and I am not willing to be a therapist. And lots of people, they just want somebody to talk to, but they're not actually going to do anything about it. And during my assessment, Christina, you've run into that. They just want somebody to talk to. They're never going to take any action. So for me, when I talk about the Olympic,
absolutely, and oftentimes when I experience that,
we lost it. Well, for me, when I started my company, I started with the premise of living like an Olympian, and the question I ask large groups of people is, what do Olympians have that most of you don't? And they'll say motivation. And meanwhile, I'm talking to a bunch of MBAs. They're in the
discipline.
Top 5%. They say, discipline. These are disciplined people who have 4.0 GPAs. All of these descriptions, these adjectives, they have. But there are three things that most people don't have that Olympians do. All Olympians have coaches. I don't care what Olympic sport it is. Every single Olympian and elite athlete has a coach. Not only do they have a coach, they have the right coach. Families will ship their children or move across the country to find the right coach. So that's what I tell people. If you want to excel, I don't care what it is. And that's what I do as a coach. I find areas that you want to excel in. And then what we'll do together is find out how to come up with a strategic personal plan for you to get there. The second thing that Olympians have that most people, not some people, all Olympians are coachable. They are all coachable. You know what happens if a person who wants to be an Olympian isn't coachable? They don't become Olympians because the coach will fire them. So a coach will not tolerate someone who is not coachable. That means getting defensive. I can't do this, or that's too hard. The coach will say, you're not ready. And Christina, I bet you've run into that, where they'll start telling you, oh, I can't do this and I can't do that. And then the third thing is commitment. Making the commitment and getting away from the excuses. So a coach, coachable, and commitment. And that's how you get on the path to living like an Olympian.
Absolutely. And oftentimes, I love what you were saying right there, too, because going back a little bit to where you realize that the person is not ready to be coached, oftentimes, but they want to talk, I'll often refer them. I'll say, you know what, you're ready to talk, but not necessarily be coached, but it sounds like you're ready to speak with a counselor.
A counselor.
You know, it sounds like there's some areas, some issues that you want to delve into, but I would not be the person that is for you. And that's the thing, you know, it goes back to what I was saying. You don't really know what you don't know or what you need until it's presented in front of you. But I congratulate them on the outreach because that's the first step. The first step is awareness. For me, I love using, I don't know if any of you all are familiar with the framework, stages of change, where you recognize this, often used with individuals who are motivating a client to move from a addictive habit to one of not being addicted to it. And so when a client is in the stage of pre-contemplation, so they're just, they're not necessarily aware that there is a need, but they're engaging with people in their space who may be making recommendations to them, but they're not really ready to accept it yet. But then awareness comes in where they start to explore the possibilities of needing the resources that has been provided to them, like a coach. But they're not ready to actually take the action yet, but they're engaging, they're having a conversation. And I, again, when you meet someone where they're asking a lot of questions, where they're dialoguing with you, it's important for you to help guide them. So maybe it's not you that they will be working with, but it's definitely, I think, a platform available to point them in the right direction and provide them with resources that they can choose to move forward with or not. But you only will know that if you're willing to engage them, meet them where they are.
So what you're really saying is basically change your mindset and change your life.
Oh, wow. I like that.
Well,
if you're willing to change your mindset.
I'm not going to claim it. That was from Dan Sullivan. He's the founder of Strategic Coach Inc. Mm-hmm. And he was speaking about our national master, Elliot Neff, which is actually speaking this Saturday in two locations. One's in Jacobson and one is in Madison Meadows. These are both elementary schools.
Yeah.
He wrote a book called A Pawn's Journey. And what I love about this is he's the best friend of actually the owner of the Chess Emporium.
Wow.
And they, the two of them, have been working together for many, many years. And they're at a platform where he has four centers in Seattle, Washington. And Scott Furneaux, which is the owner of Chess Emporium, he actually has four centers in this area. And we're so happy to have them because parents can bring them and they can learn how to move the pieces, they can learn strategy, and they can keep growing.
That's true. And it's all about growth. And so we were talking about the stages of change. And I heard from Paul how he went through these stages to change who he was and step out on his own. Christina, how did you decide to step out on your own? And anybody can jump in on this one. Like, what processes did you go through? And did you have a coach helping you along the way?
Can you ask the question again?
Yeah. When you decided to make the change, what steps did you go through? And did you have a coach to help you along the way?
So for me, I'll back up a little bit. My experience was similar to Paul in that I was working for corporate America. In August of last year is when I made the move to step out and start my own consulting business. My background is in nonprofit training on a professional level. I worked in nonprofit for almost 9 years. I was one of the grant writers and implemented successfully probably, I'd say five antisocial behavioral programming in elementary and middle school. And then in high schools, we implemented some amazing leadership classes and groups for our high school students. And some of the programming is still established there. So that's really exciting for us to see our work still living on outside of us. And then I went on to work for an organization funded through the CDC. And so I traveled nationally and was training on communicable diseases and got to work aside some really amazing people at the CDC to help craft curriculum that we then took out on the road and trained other trainers to implement. So for me, I was on this track of my career, you know, where I love working for other people that had this cause that aligned with my personal mission and vision. And then I wanted to relocate out of the state I was in. And that's what connected me to my last organization that I was with in corporate America, making a six-figure salary. I mean, I was really like doing great, loving it. And there was a change in how the organization was going to be structuring, and my department was going to be impacted. And it was one of those things where I needed the push to push me out the door because the direction they were going in was not fit for me at all. And I bought it. And I was like, no. And it was one of those things, going back to the stage of change. You know, I was in the pre-contemplation stage, moved to awareness, but I wasn't willing to do anything about it. And it wasn't until one of my supervisors came to me and sat me down and said, you know, are you really happy? And I was like,
no, I'm not happy. Well,
we've all had that conversation.
I'm not happy. But sometimes it was one of those things where I had to kind of face the fact that I was at a space where I needed to come to grips with what was next. But I was scared. There was this unknown. I had never been in this place in my career where I did not know where I was going. I have, you know, I've just always seemed to hit the winning lottery when it came to.
So one of the things I'm hearing from her is that
fear, because it was.
What I hear you saying is that you came to a certain point in your life and it was like, mm-hmm. what do I do now? And it's funny yeah. because that's pretty much what happened to me. I was yeah. a DJ, actually, for cool. 20 years, okay? And we're not talking just, you know, a small-time DJ. I was the mm-hmm. very first female DJ that stepped on the stage in Las Vegas. But guess
wow.
what? Nobody knows it because I was the only female. So by the time
wow.
I was leaving the DJ arena, mm-hmm. that was when other women started going onto that stage, and you know all the rest of the story. But what I did was I literally took the DJ hat off, put the chess hat on, and I began to volunteer. Because volunteering is the thing that brought me to life with this whole chess world. I knew I wanted my sons to learn it. And my first son didn't learn it until he was older. And I kind of regretted that. So this son, I no way, I'm going to get him right away. So kindergartner, I get this slip and it says third graders and fifth graders can go to the chess club. So I kind of walk in and, oh, can I do this? Can I bring my son in here? As long as you come, is what Alan LaCour said. And Alan LaCour then became a mentor of mine, because that particular mentor said, you have to be here once a week, every week, and, you know, help us out. Well, there was 60 people that showed up. All these students, girls and boys, all showing up every Tuesday to do this. And I knew he was doing it a bit too long, because he said, oh, yes, I did this when my daughter was in first grade, and she's now got her MBA in college. So when I went into the chess world, it changed my life. And
wow.
I literally went, I could use all the tools that I learned from DJing and communicate with my kids. And the way I communicate with my kids is with little stories, and I sing a little bit with them. And, you know, the dancing queen is on the white square, so it's a D that you put her on. And you see it's a white square, and if you threw it over to the other side, you see there's a D that's dark. So the dark queen belongs on that side, and the white queen belongs on this side. Why? Because white goes first. So you know you move, white goes first when you see the ones. Now you instantly know how to set up a chessboard.
I think I might actually want to play chess on this board.
Yeah, that looks like a fun
bit more
board.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things that I think might be interesting for the listeners is I knew that I was ready to leave when I had this quasi-divorce. Mm-hmm. And today I am the managing member of 5 LLCs, and Enid, you know my wife, Debbie.
Yeah,
I am the co-owner
lovely.
Of one of the largest RV dealerships in the country. Uh-huh. So I have a passion for entrepreneurship. But I discourage a lot of people, because I meet a lot of 25, 30, 40-year-olds who would tell me they want me to coach them because mm-hmm. they want to go in business for themselves. And the first question I ask is, why? Sometimes they say, well, I want to be my own boss. And I say, well, actually, you'll always have bosses, because bankers mm-hmm. are my boss sometimes. And mm-hmm. I have tax people who are my boss, and they're directing me. So you're not necessarily ever going to be free, because you'll have suppliers. You'll have all kinds of people who you have to work with. And sometimes
right.
they'll think, well, I want to have more free time, which I laugh about, because when you're an entrepreneur, oftentimes you'll be working 16 hours a day and making $1.45 an hour. That's about it.
Yeah.
But what, why people feel this way is because they hear this term of find your passion. You have to be, and they think passion is outside of what they're doing. When you can become passionate about being an accountant, you can become passionate about being a plumber. So
that's
passion,
true.
Right? So passion. I want people to realize that where you are may be your acres of diamonds. And I don't know if the audience knows the Earl Nightingale acres of diamonds. And I have one client who I've coached, and he wanted to leave a really good company for terrible reasons.
Okay.
Today he came in. This is about 3 years ago. As I told him to stay with his company, today he came in and told me he'd become the VP of marketing for his firm, making three times what he was making when I spoke with him. So I don't always encourage people to go out on their own. There's
it's 2,000
people per month in Maricopa County file bankruptcy.
Oh,
and a lot of people don't know that number. And when you're an entrepreneur, when you work for a company and something happens, you lose your job. When you're an entrepreneur, you can lose your house.
That's true.
Right.
So it's not for
everyone. You lose your life. It's not for everyone, though. I think that, unfortunately, everyone is looking for the next great best thing, right? Or the next way to live your life. Because you, Paul said it right there. There's always someone yelling at you, live your best life, live your best life. Your best life can be the work that you're doing now, but what makes
Absolutely.
You unhappy could be something that you need to deal with that requires a counselor or a therapist or maybe talking to your pastor. I think that being an entrepreneur or starting a business, if you know, a small business owner, I think there has to be more than just passion. There has to be purpose.
Well,
why are you doing this?
Right.
Yes,
purpose is so important. For me, I have my breakdown with my, I wasn't happy, but I had purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't that I was leaving this company because I lost the passion for it. No, I still have a very great relationship with everyone in that company. In fact, they texted me the other day and have referred clients to me. But your purpose, what is your purpose? Are you walking in your purpose?
Well,
why were you created? I think that's more important.
Doesn't that also key in with the whole idea, do what you love and then the money will follow? I mean,
my father tells me that all the time.
When I took
that
DJ hat off, okay, it's lucrative. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at the top of my game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's scary to take that hat off and I'm doing less traveling and trying to find my way. To actually realize that you can become the teacher because you spend the time, with the children and you listen to the children.
Mm-hmm.
And I perfected how you speak and what you say to those children so they'll remember. A lot of people don't realize that there's so many different ways the kids learn. They don't just see something. They can hear something, too.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's up to us to listen. You know, as coaches, it's really important to listen, even as people, to learn. That's how I learn a lot of information. My kids always say, do we have to go in? Do we have to talk? You know, that opening conversation, how are you doing? How are the kids?
Right.
I get so much information, and I might even get what I came for out of the person because you listen and react.
Yeah.
You just have to be patient.
Yeah.
So, what do you guys think about that? Listening.
Well, it's important.
Active listening.
Active listening is really critical. But if I have somebody say to me, and I'm not contradicting, I just want to add to the fact that to say, if you do what you love, the money will follow.
Mm-hmm.
I call shenanigans on that. Because there are lots of wonderful careers that you can be passionate about. But the market doesn't respect it, or the market doesn't place value on it. So therefore, you're making a choice. I'm going to make a great contribution. And the best example are teachers. Then we have a shortage in Arizona. Anybody can now go teach. If you have a college degree, just go to ArizonaTeachers.org and you could go teach because nobody wants to go into the profession because you can't make any money. And a lot of people say, well, money is not important. Well, it's right up there with oxygen. money's really important. And most of my clients come to me because they would like to get to the point where money is not on their mind 24/7. And that's a sad commentary today, is that a significant portion of the population is worried about money from the time they get up to the time they go to the sleep. They have constant worries. And some of them are really serious, where they can't pay their rent. Mm-hmm. And some of them are where they haven't taken a vacation in 10 years. So I like to put money in the proper context. If that's important to you, then find a profession that our market respects and is willing to remunerate you appropriately.
So I would open it up to the entire public, any of you out there, any of the listeners out there that actually know how to play chess. In fact, this guy might even join our team. The whole idea is, if you know how to play chess, then get one school. You don't have to have 10 schools like me. I do it full time. And I have the 10 schools because I wanted the 10 schools. But get one school, get your feet wet, see if you're good at teaching, see if you communicate with the parents well. And if you do, then get another school. The whole idea is, it's a good in-between thing where you could actually do it part-time, see if you like it. If you like it, now you're getting some money, some extra money for you, while you're trying to decide what it is you want to do. We have so many students that graduated from the Chess Emporium, you know, way with their tournaments and all that. They're now our coaches, and they make a good living at doing that. And so, and we're talking a really good living doing that, because not only are they passionate about it, but they, that passion shines through to the parents and the children. And so that's key.
Go ahead, Christina.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think the sound cut out on me. But what I was going to say, I wanted to add on to what she was saying. When I say to people, you know, do what you love and the money will follow, my next follow-up is, so how much do you want to make? Because for me, I did what I love and the money did show up. I was able to buy a house on a nonprofit salary. And so for me, it was what was the dollar amount? So I had to sit down and look at, what could I afford? This is what I love to do. Working in nonprofit is another career where, you know, you're overworked and underpaid, but I loved what I did. I loved what I did. And in order for me to make the money that I needed to make in order to experience the lifestyle that I wanted to experience, I had to sit down with myself and with a financial advisor and have a really hard conversation about what that looked like. And for me, it took going back to school and investing in more education, but I came up with a plan on how to afford that as well. And again, the market has changed. You know, this was back in, you know, the mid-2000s. So a lot has changed and it will continue to change. But I think for me, when I talk to clients and also to the listeners, if there's something that you're really passionate about, but you don't know if it's your purpose, I think there, you need to go back to why. I always, his name is Simon. I can't think of his last name.
Cynic,
but he wrote a book, Start With Why. Thank you. Start With Why. That is one of the best books you can pick up. Start with why. Why do I want to do this? I think if you ask yourself the why question at minimum three times, you can drill down to the core of what it is that you really want and make sure that it measures up, so that you don't find yourself just jumping into the next best great thing because, you know, it's what everyone else is doing. And then you find yourself, you know, in financial hardship.
See, I disagree. I actually disagree. And that's what this is all about, right?
Right.
I disagree. Because when I was asking questions and learning about communication, why never solved anything. The why is the love. If the
well,
why,
it's the start with. It's not necessarily solving. It's what you start with.
Right, but
you
it's
start
it's
with
love.
Why.
The
it,
why
it's
is
not solving it. There's but, more work to be done.
But isn't the why the love? Love is the why.
That can be your why.
It no,
could
it
love.
Could be your why,
yeah.
But you need to drill down further.
Yeah. But then once
love?
You get to the why, then I think the thing is the why is the center. That's the beginning. And then as you go outward, then you're able to answer the what.
Who, what, where, how.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but you need that passion. You need to know, oh, I love doing this. And that's what's going to get you past the what, the when.
And you have to remember, it evolves.
It evolves.
Exactly, Paul.
What you think is your why today, you have to be open to it modifying in the future. So that's what I have learned. And people who are 30 and then are 50, they've gone through so many life experiences.
Well, my big mentor that actually taught me about chess tournaments and stuff like that, his name was Brother John. And he truly was a brother. And what he did was he was responsible. You'll love this. He was responsible for getting kids involved in chess from Bronx, Harlem, Queens, all the places in New York City that nobody else wanted to deal with. And Brother John was able to communicate to these kids, not by preaching to them. He never preached to them. Mm-hmm. He never preached to them once. Mm-hmm. Not in front of me, ever. And 25 years, he did all that to build it up to 250 people coming to tournaments on a regular basis. So what did he do? He retired. When he retired, he came up to upstate New York, where Albany, which is the capital of New York State. Mm-hmm. And what did he do? He spent another 20 years in building another community of chess, where we had 150 kids going to a tournament every time we had a tournament. So if it wasn't for him, I was able to learn. He said, oh, you're going to be the secretary. Oh, here, you're going to help me with trophies. Here, you're going to come early and set me up, you know, help me set up. I loved it.
Yeah, and that's right there. That's a good coach, because he can look and see what you're good at and put you in. If you keep you busy, he keeps you there.
Well, one of the things this brother probably did, and this is one of the things I loved about chess as well, is that number one, it taught you to focus.
So now you had to
get that focus on what's going on, and here's the best thing. There's consequences for your actions.
Ah, yes.
Which so many young children don't understand. Mm-hmm. So that if you make a move, that move, there's a consequence.
Yes.
And if you can, and I love, one of the things I love about Toastmasters is I'm a huge fan, as you know.
Yes.
Is that it's all about transferable skills.
Yes.
When in Toastmasters, a lot of people think Toastmasters is that's it. It's
right.
Toastmasters.
Just talking. That's
right. No, it's learning transferable skills that you can take, in my case, to the marketplace and cash in on it. And chess provides that as well, especially to young children who don't understand the importance of focus, consequence of your actions, having a strategy. Because I teach people, have a personal, like in business, we have a strategic plan, a strategic marketing plan, a strategic business plan. We need strategic personal plans.
And learning exactly what not to do.
On
the chessboard, if you don't learn what not to do, hey, parents, bring your kids to a chess tournament if you think your kid is not getting it. Because the other kids will say, oh, no, no, you can't do that. That's illegal. Okay? And that's what you want them to do. Don't wait until your poor child has all these other kids going to tournament and they're seasoned and they're really good, and then now we're going to go to the last tournament. No, you missed it. Okay, you want to bring them to the tournament right away, because then you're all learning together. That first tournament, they're all brand new.
When you're saying that you're learning together, and we talked about people having coaches that were entrepreneurs, but then I also know, let's say people that are homeschooled, they always have a community they get together. Do entrepreneurs have communities where they can go and converse with each other, find out what are the good things that have happened, what are some good strategies?
I spent last week with a mastermind group. We don't call it a mastermind group, but it's a group of RV dealers from Canada and the United States. We get together every quarter at a different location where there are dealerships, and we share all our financial information, all our marketing strategies, so that we can learn from each other.
Nice.
And one of the key things for our listeners to understand is that what we now have is benchmarks.
Mm-hmm.
We have the benchmark. And one of my favorite books that talks about benchmarks is Good to Great.
Mm-hmm.
See, a lot of people, they don't do anything because they're doing good. And when you do good, you don't want to rock the boat. You don't want to take any chances because you're comfortable. Mm-hmm. And you're doing good. You never get to great.
Yes.
And with our group, we push each other to get to great. We might push each other to build another dealership. We might push each other to get a different line of RVs. But we're being pushed, and that can happen in any environment.
So how does that pull back into coaching?
How it pulls back into coaching is we're all coaches around that table. Everybody that is at that meeting is there as a coach.
Right.
So sometimes, since I'm a builder, sometimes they'll come up to me and I'll go to their dealership and I'll say, this place needs some major work.
Okay.
And we get there and we talk about how you can take that dealership and rebrand it. So that now you can elevate maybe your product offering, and you can come up with a product that you can go from a $100,000 RV to a $250,000. So I'm operating as a coach in that environment, but I operate in a coach as a coach in a lot of environments.
Yeah.
That just happens to be one of them.
Yeah, that's more like the peer coaching.
That's peer coaching.
Yeah. Right. Another thing I think is really important is to recognize that as entrepreneurs, you cannot do everything. And so it's important to create an ecosystem that has access to other entrepreneurs, other organizations that can actually help support the work that you're doing. I know I'm based in San Diego. One of the things that is really huge out here is that we have co-working spaces. So oftentimes there are networking groups where other like-minded individuals can come together in spaces and share their successes, their challenges, exchange information, and possibly partner, which happens a lot. There's also a really great group. I won't curse, but it's called EFA. And it's just individual entrepreneurs who come together on a weekly basis and talk about their big F-ups and how they overcame them. And I think that's also really important as an entrepreneur, is to talk about the parts that are ugly, where you messed up and you had to start over again, and what that looked like. So those are the areas that exist here in my space that I am a part
of. I actually agree with the whole idea of the Toastmasters, because my original, the person that taught me how to play chess, which I was age 24 when I learned how to play chess, which that means most of my kids can go far, far beyond me, okay, because I started when I was 24. But he was a part of the Toastmaster organization. He was a motivational speaker himself, and he never gave me any hints on how to play chess. He just had me play about, you know, four games twice a week, and it took me a year and a half to beat him.
Wow.
That might be the reason why he didn't want you to beat him. You know, just like
then
that.
Once you start winning, forget about it. You know,
you're
then,
hungry.
Then it's different, okay? But it wasn't competing that sparked me.
But let me stop you there, because I just heard you said it was the winning that made you hungry. And so now that you're winning at being an entrepreneur, is that making you even more hungry to do more schools? You're up to 10 right now.
I'm up to 10 schools right now.
So how hungry are you? Does it keep you motivated?
Well, it's not just getting more schools.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually just building each school. Because right now I have seven. Out of 21 are girls out of Neely, and Serena Venti is my champion. Last year, the first graders were beating this poor little fourth grader.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
The first graders were beating her. Mm-hmm. And if it wasn't for her cousin, Juliet Shepherd was the person who inspired her, because she won all these trophies as a kindergartner, which is easy to do. Mm-hmm. All you do is have to show up. And then she was responsible for her best friend signing up And then the next semester, her sister signed up. So Joyce and Grace Tong joined. Mm-hmm. And I actually have this beautiful picture.
I love the picture.
That is the whole family and the reason why Neely now mm-hmm. has 21 students mm-hmm. because of her. She moved to Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow.
So we miss her.
So, Paul, is it the hunger Aww. For success that keep you going or your people that you coach?
Well, at this point in my life, the hunger is from changing people's lives. I tell you, the greatest reward that I get is when someone comes up to me and says, thank you so much for talking to me, and thank you so much. You've changed my life. It really hits a part of my soul that I didn't think would ever happen 40 years ago, because 40 years ago, I was just focused on making money, doing the best I possibly can. And I love being part of a big organization and being a great team member and moving our company and being successful. I mean, there are a lot of rewards, monetary and social rewards that existed. But like we talked earlier, you're evolving. And now I'm at this place in life where I love to change people's lives. Toastmasters is one way. Coaching people is another. And I really try to focus on executives, professionals, and highly motivated individuals, because their excitement gets me excited. So I really love it. And I almost do that 5 days a week, but not the many hours, as I'm always talking with someone on the phone, someone who wants to build their business, and they're creating. What I like to do is train the trainer. So whenever I have a client, I teach them coaching techniques. And I tell them that part of what you're going to be doing as an entrepreneur or running your company is you now, by default, you're a coach. Learn these techniques. Mm-hmm. Learn how to get out of the way. What I did for my employees is I created a safety net. I said, I want you to make a mistake. If you don't make a mistake, you're not trying hard enough.
Right.
And that's what I want people to be feeling comfortable with, because I've taken some risks which were really scary.
Not
they didn't always turn out, but most of the time they did, because our fear gets blown out of proportion.
And
we really do, because the desire for gain is much less than the fear of loss. I have to get people to not have that out of proportion. If they can even get it close, that gain is important, then gain will give you rewards, and rewards that maybe you can pass on to others. And I'm into the pass on to other phase of life right now. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what Catherine was telling me yesterday. She said, I know that you're into the mode, that you're trying to accomplish all of these things, but I'm in a different place right now.
Right, right.
Yes, and that's really important.
And it's important. It's important for everybody to understand that if you're lucky enough, you'll get to that stage.
Yeah.
It's because getting older, because I have a lot of young clients, and sometimes they'll make some jokes about me being a little older, and I'll say, getting old is a privilege.
It is denied
to many.
That's true.
And so I have no regrets.
Yeah, no regrets. But he looks half his age, if anybody would know. Which is a blessing in itself.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, I've been teaching for 14 years now, because I told you about my DJ hat. But 14 years, and 10 of those years were in upstate New York, and now 4 years here in this area. And when you see a child that comes to every single tournament, I have a kid from Kyrene Del Norte, Kagiso Tagapi. He is amazing. He comes to every single tournament. And at first, he was a little disappointed, a little hard on himself. So then you have to guide him and coach him that behavior is the first part. And you know what? As soon as he got it, he got it. He is now president of his class that has 23 students in it.
Oh, wow.
And everybody in the class loves him.
Well, I hate to bring this to an end, but we're like 5 minutes out. Dan was
getting nervous over
No, he's not getting nervous, but the conversation was so good. It's like, oh my goodness, and then it's over. But I want to end it by finding out a little bit about your company, starting with you, Paul.
Okay. Well, as I mentioned, my company is called The Olympic Method, and I am a professional coach that focuses on executives, professionals, and highly enthusiastic individuals. And I do the assessment. And I brought a book because as a coach, I wanted to have people in this, because my advice to everybody is get a coach. And invest in yourself. And there's lots of coaches. You don't have to pay anything, but you're investing time. There's always something that you're investing.
Right.
And the reason I know coaching works is there's a great book called Nudge. And everybody needs a nudge. When people say, well, I don't want to coach because they're going to push me. Well, you're missing an opportunity. And I am a professional nudger. I like to nudge people. I like to push them so they can, you know, some people say, I want to get you thinking out of the box. I say, expand the box. That's my approach, is you expand the box so that there are no limits.
That's cool. And do you have contact information?
pbruno2 at cox.net.
Cool.
Contact me if you have some questions, follow-up questions. I'd be happy, no cost. I just love talking to people.
Okay.
And, you know, give me a call, and I'll even talk about your specific circumstances. It's fun for me. So.
Oh, great.
And
well, Samantha?
Mine is chess for all, for you too, at gmail.com. And Coach Samantha, of course, is who you're looking for. It's 480-930-1491. And there are four centers in the location, so you can look up chessemporium.com. And I would really invite any of the parents, if you're thinking about moving, check the schools out. See if there's a chess club.
Hey, Christina, let us know how to find you.
Absolutely. So the best way to find me, if you're on social media, go to Instagram. I am Christiana1, and that's super, super easy there. And then you can find me on my website at mendedwingconsulting, all one word, .com. And I love that Paul says he's a nudger. I love connecting with people. When you connect with people, you're able to find out a little bit more about what their desires and their hopes and dreams are. And so for me, I offer free consulting. You can reach out to me and see if I'm a good fit. But one thing I just want to leave everyone with is to start asking yourself, who am I? What do I want? Am I doing it now? And if not, what do I need to do to get there? And a coach is one of the best ways, but you can start with a conversation. So I'd love to have that conversation.
So on that note, I would like to invite everyone to a free Shark Tank with Kevin O'Leary live in Mesa. He's going to be there on Tuesday, October 30th from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. And you tell them that Samantha Gignes sent you.
And we will. I want to thank everyone for joining us. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you. Great being here. It's a lot
of
fun.
Thank you so much for having
us. You're wonderful.
I learned so much from the other coaches. I love you guys.
Thank you, Christina.
I now got to go find a chess thing to go play. And I love RVs, by the way.
Oh,
I'm trying to get my family on one, so...
Just
I might reach out to
littledealer.com. You just go on there
perfect.
and just check it out. My wife's the CEO, and my brother-in-law's run the company. So it's one of the largest in Arizona, littledealer.com.
Little dealer, little dealer, little prices.
That's it.
See? Oh, yeah. I love it. I love it.
Hi, neighbor.
Awesome.
So
thank you.
This segment of people taking the leap out of corporate America into their own businesses have been brought to you by Divinity Salon and also Propel Coaching. And I invite you to come back and listen to us again, because you never know what you're going to hear, because it's all about the conversation. It's all about the journey.
Okay.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
Everybody quiet.
Thank you.